Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we are here with
Cody Nickel, and I'm playing Terry A. Rod Larson.
My name is Erin Weaver, and I'm playing Mona Yule.
In the Tony-winning play, Oslo, which is at Roundhouse Theater, although Roundhouse is getting renovated, we have to say, so everyone head down to Shakespeare's Theater's Landsberg Theater down by Capital One Arena. It runs now through May 19th. Thanks so much for coming in, guys.
Thanks for having us.
So real fast, before we jump into the show, what's the deal with the renovation? It's nice that Shakespeare's offering their space.
Right. So, yeah, Roundhouse is doing a renovation. They're doing two shows, I think, out of their space, this and the next show, which is Doll's House Part 2. The renovation, I believe, will be done late summer, early fall to get back into their space next season. And they're all really excited about how it's going, and we'll make that space even better.
Awesome. All right, so just wanted to clear that out. So people, make sure they don't head to the wrong place.
Indeed.
Awesome. Okay, let's talk Oslo. Obviously, it won the Tony for Best Play in 2017, I believe.
That is correct, yeah.
Give us, before we go into the characters or anything like that, who wants to take the basic premise here? It's about the Oslo Peace Accords, 1993, I believe.
Sure, correct. Yeah. So a lot of people remember 1993, that very famous picture with Yasser Arafat and Yitzhak Rabin and President Bill Clinton shaking hands at the Rose Garden. And we most often associate that famous handshaking moment with maybe the Washington talks that were happening at that time. Most people don't realize that agreement, that peace agreement that happened, was really facilitated by a Norwegian couple.
Just the husband and wife.
A husband and wife who felt inspired to try to create a conversation that was different from any other conversations that were happening. And because Norway is a very neutral country, they felt that they had the ability to maybe bring Palestinians and Israelis together to have meaningful conversations in a way that wasn't really happening in the Washington negotiations that were being facilitated in Madrid at the time. And so we associate that picture because we see Clinton there, and
Final big official moment.
That's right.
But
right.
We forget about the grassroots private citizens that
pulled
it off.
Most people didn't know that this was really done mostly in Norway, and that it was inspired particularly by Tadi Rod Larsen. And I'll let you talk more about him.
Sociologist who I think is interested in lots of different things. He's called a dilettante in the play several times because he's a little bit out of his league. But he was like, sure, I'm going to work on peace, not being a diplomat, not being a government official. But
it's like when I sit between two actors and for an interview, it's the same thing.
Yeah. So, you know, what do I know? But he seems, he's, as Erin said, inspired to kind of get involved, and his unique approach to facilitating negotiations really kind of worked out. And from all that we've read and learned about, because we were really lucky enough to have several people who were actually involved in the talks come and speak to us during rehearsals, and other people who've done other talks after that.
Who came and talked?
Joel Singer, who's a character in the play. He came and spoke to us. Who else?
David Makovsky,
who wrote a book about the whole process and was, I believe, a reporter stationed in Israel during these times.
We also had an opportunity. You weren't here. You weren't in town at this point in time.
Right.
But Ryan Rillette set up for a couple of us, Mahboud, who's in the show, and our dramaturg and associate artistic director of Roundhouse, Nicole. I'm doing horrible with last names, but there we were all had the opportunity to meet Joel Singer and Tadie at a talk that they were doing. So we also had a chance to meet them a couple months before we start rehearsals.
Awesome. Now, do you know, did the original playwright, when it was on Broadway or even before it got to Broadway, did they interview the actual real life husband and wife?
My understanding is that Tarje and JT, the playwright, JT Rogers, they have a child in school together, and that they met, and Tarje told JT, you're the person to tell my story.
Okay.
Mostly from Tarje. That my understanding is that was kind of the in for JT, and that he limited his exposure to other people in the story because he wanted a little bit more freedom to have his voice come through, JT's voice come through.
Gotcha.
And that, you know, Mona is one of the only people involved in it that hasn't written about it. So there's lots of material out there from these various people who were involved in the talks from all sides, and Tarje has written and, you know, been interviewed. But JT was heavily involved with the storytellers. He went to Oslo and he met, there's a couple in the play that plays a small part, that were hosts for some of this, and he met them, and, you know, they're real. I mean, everybody in the play is real. It's very interesting to do this kind of high docudrama style.
Yeah.
But it's great. Yeah, it's great.
Well, we're talking a lot about, you know, what they did in terms of you know, pulling off the peace accords, but what about them as people? You know, because as actors, you need something to grasp onto in terms of, like, their personal life, not just what we know publicly in the public sphere. So, yeah, what juicy tidbits, I mean, you can each take turns, but, like, what juicy tidbits about them as people did you try to bring out, or that you even, you know, brought to the character in your, you know, workshopping it?
One of the things that really stuck out for me is how humble Mona is about her involvement in these negotiations as a facilitator, obviously. So one of the important things about both of them is they were adamant about not being a part of the negotiations. They were only facilitators. But, of course, they still made a lot of this happen, the logistics of it happen, and helped to facilitate them in a very unique way. And so I'm always amazed by her humility and the way she, I don't want to say minimizes, but doesn't focus on her role in the conversation. So I've listened to her do a number of podcasts, and I listen to her a lot for her energy and her tone, but also for her accent. And she's an amazing woman. She's brilliant, and it's not just a quality of Mona's, but it's actually, we've learned, a very Norwegian quality to put less focus on yourself and to focus more on whatever the accomplishment is in front of you. And so that was important to me to apply that to her in the play. And, you know, but I also, as an actor, had to find my own way into the character. And so we do our research as much as we can, but at a certain point, I just sort of have to find my own connections to the story and come up with my own character traits. But I really, because she's alive and well today and she is such a spectacular human being, I really spent a lot of time with her via, you know, podcasts and interviews. And then, you know, similarly, I watched a ton of videos of Tarje, and, you know, in some ways they seem very similar, but in some ways they're very different. I would feel Mona's more of an introvert, Tarje's more of an extrovert. We've joked around in rehearsal that Mona's more of the Norwegian, Tarje's more of the American. So they do have these very opposing qualities, which make them such an incredible team. But from what we've read, and certainly what we're playing at in the play, caused a tremendous amount of tension between them.
Yeah, and
about Tarje.
So Tarje, it's interesting. He's a little bit the opposite, I think. And certainly, as written in the play, he is not humble. He's called an egomaniac several times. He's called a dilettante several times. I think he is hungry for exposure. Is not the right word. He's hungry to be in the room. He's hungry to be effective, and he's hungry to be involved, and believes, for good or for bad, that he has the skills to do that. Almost every person, we had four or five people come into rehearsal to talk to us who knew these people. And almost all of them said wonderful things about Mona. And almost all of them were like, Tarje. You know, like, but I think there was a great recognition of what they both did. And they just had different ways of doing it. And it's in the play. There's this sense that everyone kind of loves and praises Mona, and everyone tolerates Tarje, but they realize that they need him and they need them, and what they both add to the equation.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that's really important, and I don't know that this is anything that I've read personally or that you've read. I don't know if you've come across this, but I think it was really important for Cody and I. One of the things that I try to do a lot in this play is that while he gets ridiculed and he's called all those names, it's always been important to me that you can see in my eyes as Mona that I do respect him and that I do see his brilliance and that I do go along with this. This is not her idea. In fact, she's very hesitant to do it and she puts a lot of resistance. There's a lot of resistance from her throughout the story. But you know, she sees his goodness and his altruism and his innovation in having and facilitating these talks. And so I feel like that's important. That's something that they both have together. When other people can't see it, she can see it.
And where, remind our listeners, when I say 93, it doesn't seem that long ago in my mind, but it's forever ago.
Really long time ago.
Where were we in 93? Because I know what the Carter administration, right? There was the Camp David Accords back in like the 70s. But in the run up to this, what was the actual landscape? Remind our listeners, like heading into this, how did they actually stitch it together?
Yeah. So there were multiple attempts at facilitating negotiations and trying to create peace. One of them, of course, is the one you just mentioned, was the Camp David talks. Leading up to this play, there were talks facilitated by Washington that primarily they took place in London and a couple of different countries, but they primarily were in Madrid. And they were actually happening at the same time as the Oslo Accords. And so what was happening was you had a very cold negotiation process. There was a great many people in the room. It was not very personal. And
the PLO wasn't represented at all.
Right.
That it was illegal for Israelis to meet with Palestinians, and it was against the government's policies. So the PLO was not at the table. Now, they picked everyone at the table. But so it was a rather dysfunctional talk.
Yeah.
You mean
the American-sponsored version.
Whereas the Oslo one did have PLO involved.
So what happened was the Oslo Accords were really – they were inspired from Tadier and Mona's traveling to Israel and basically that whole region. She was her first the place where she was stationed first was in Cairo, and Tadi came with her. And so they traveled the region, and they really fell in love with it, and they became very compassionate towards the situation. So that was their own experience, paralleled with knowing about the conversations in Madrid and that they were going nowhere. And that's where Tadia came up with this inspiration to start another back-channel conversation.
Yeah, that was a secret thing that would just really kind of feed new water into these stagnant talks that were happening. It wasn't ever supposed to be the main one. It wasn't supposed to do anything other than like, hey, maybe we can start a side conversation that will help.
Right.
And we can actually get the PLO to the table because we will make it completely secret. Like their whole idea was, we won't tell anybody. No one will know this is actually happening. So Israel and the PLO, they won't be shamed for talking with the enemy. And it will be all be done in private, all be done without America's involvement. And then eventually they bore enough fruit that they said, let's make these the official talks. And though they were still secret.
Yes.
No one in Washington knew that these were the official talks. It was all kind of happening backhanded. So it's one of the reasons that people think maybe they failed was that it wasn't public enough and there wasn't an oversight. So it was a little bit of a surprise when they happened. So the populations of both of these sides weren't quite ready to take in what had been happening under wraps.
Right, right.
One of the things that comes up a lot in the play is this idea of totalism and gradualism that Tadier's character talks about and that he specialized in and taught about and was very creative in his ideas about how these conversations should happen as opposed to how they're always happening. And so the Oslo Accords really happened in the style of gradualism, dealing with one small subject at a time, trying to address it and then move forward to another one. And I definitely, you should talk more about that. But one of the ideas about why they didn't work is that while the negotiators in the Oslo Accords were dealing in gradualism, the rest of the Israelis and Palestinians had no idea it was happening. So once the Oslo Accords became final, you had a group of people on both sides who had no idea this was happening and had no journey or no connection to these peace accords. And that's why there was such a literally violent reaction to them.
Yeah. What so that's sort of – thanks for taking me through that a little bit, because that gave our audience a little bit of the historical context of the time. But what about – flip it a little bit now. What's the audience experience like? We did a lot of character work. What's going through your heads and the historical backdrop. But when our listeners come and sit in the theater and see this thing, what is their is it a nail biter? Is it what's the experience?
It's got
like
a little bit of everything.
From the audience
side? It's got a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
I think JT has done an incredible job of crafting. I mean, there's a lot to put in. There's a lot of information that he has to convey, and there is a distance that we have being, in 2000, then when he was writing 2016, but now 2019, there's a distance between then and now, so he's got to make it feel close and yet also not feel too close, because then it's hard, I think, to touch. There's such touchy subjects, and people fall down on like, well, I'm anti-Zionist, or I'm a Zionist, or I'm pro-Israel, or I'm not pro-Israel, so it's to convey this, and the sense of what I think he really is trying to say in this play is like, it's best to try. You have to try to make peace. If you don't, we just have war and we have conflict. And if you're not willing to get together and look at the other people who you are fighting with and get to know them personally, we're going to go nowhere. So JT does an incredible job of conveying lots of facts and lots of true characters and doing it with charm and wit. And it's very powerful. I think it's very funny, though. It's not a short play.
No.
And people...
Are we talking 2:45?
2:45.
Yeah.
And, plus
people, intermission.
Yeah. And people come in, I think... I've heard several times, a three-hour political play. I was really dreading it. But it's so good, and it moves so fast, and it's funny, and it's moving. He just crafted... And Ryan Rillette, our director, he took JT's brilliant piece... And he really made a brilliant production out of it. I mean, we've got a great cast and the designers are brilliant, but it really moves so seamlessly. It's very cinematic in some ways in the way that it's written in short scenes and multiple locations, and we kind of jump around all the time. But then also there is a theatricality to it that is really wonderful. And the audiences have been eating it up. I mean, it's selling incredibly well. The huge standing ovations every night. Knock on wood. You can't see that.
I'm knocking on my own head.
But people have loved it. And I think it's because of JT and Ryan really crafting this beautifully forward-thinking, forward-moving play.
Ryan and Gabrielle, our dramaturg, they worked so hard. They honored this story and the complexity of the story so beautifully. And we spent so much time in rehearsal. I mean, more time than I have on any other play I've worked on, researching and talking through and having guests and visiting the Norwegian embassy and having guests both Palestinian and Israeli. I mean, we've been immersed with this story and the realities of the story and the history and the details and the depth and the emotion. So when we had our first preview, I think we were all completely shocked about how funny it was. I mean, it's so funny. There's and a lot of and part of it's just really funny, but sometimes it's funny because the tension is so high. And because the emotions are so high and the attentions are so high and the stakes are so high, that moment where something's funny, it's extra funny because everyone's in it together, going through this together. And so it's really, I've heard multiple people say that it moves incredibly quickly. It does not feel like it's a 2 hour and 45 minute play. And JT's also built an incredible amount of suspense in the story. Mm-hmm. So even if you know the story, you still find yourself always trying to figure out what's going to happen next. It's still a nail biter. So when I read it, I really did not know really anything about the Oslo Accords. And my first read of it, I not only did I love it, but I felt like I completely understood what was happening at all times and learned more about that time. I found it to be humbling and inspiring, but it was also hilarious. It's a really fun time, which is surprising.
Well, that's the key to do a historical piece. Yeah. You know, it takes you, like you said, for someone that maybe have heard of it but doesn't know anything about it, it's that page turner nail biter like you had, or people that are very familiar. You're still hoping for a different outcome, and then So well, it sounds like
Here in DC, we know that there are people who know about it.
Right.
I was at an opening for a different play the other night, and a woman came up to me. She said, "The show is great, and you know, my husband worked for the State Department, so I've called 30 people from the State Department. 10 of which have already gone. You know, so we're getting people who know this really inside and out. And there are a couple lines I have that 3 or 4 people will laugh every night. I was like, State Department.
Totally.
You can hear the inside. Yeah, you can hear the insiders going like, oh. Or, you know, when somebody imitates Kissinger and you get 3 people giggling in a corner. I was like, oh, well, they know Kissinger. You know, like,
it's the Kissinger corner.
That's right.
Totally. I think the other thing, too, that's really important is that if you are not a political person and if you really don't know much about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, this is a very human story.
Yeah.
And anyone can relate to it. You will be moved because as a human being, you understand what it's like to be in conflict with either a loved one or someone that has caused you pain, and yet you are forced to live in relation to them. And you are trying, and they are trying to find common ground because they have to, because they're a close relation or a best friend or whatever it is. This is a very human topic. So, of course, it's super fun. It's super political. It's great to be in the know. But if you're not, there is a place for you in this story where you can see yourself up there and you can relate to the pain and the struggle and the humor and the love that these characters are going through.
Awesome. Well, I can't wait to see it tomorrow night. I don't know whether to put me in the tickets. I don't know if it's the Kissinger corner or not. But
we'll see.
We'll be in our radio corner. Yeah. Again, everybody, it's Oslo, Tony-winning play from 2017, now at Roundhouse Theater. But that's getting renovated, so come over to Shakespeare Theater's Landsberg Theater by Capital One Arena now through May 19th. Thanks so much for coming in, guys.
Thank you, Jason.
Thanks for having us.